Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Like so many folks, New York City-based freelance director Kristen McCarthy Parker is not a native New Yorker. She was born in Hanover, New Hampshire. Her family then moved to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. She's a graduate of Indiana's University of Evansville, and then she spent time in Maine, interning at the Portland Stage Company. Since her arrival here in 2012, Kristen's been plenty busy. Briefly, she assisted Obie Award-winning director Michael Greif of Rent and Next to Normal fame, and Tripp Cullman, who has a pair of shows heading to Broadway in 2017, Significant Other and 6 Degrees of Separation. But also in that time, Kristen found her niche, directing top-notch theatrical parodies of blockbuster films. They include, in no particular order, Puffs, a Harry Potter parallel, Kevin, about Home Alone, Fly, You Fools, Lord of the Rings, and Hold On to Your Butts. You may recall that was the line Samuel Jackson spoke not once but twice in Jurassic Park. Hold On to Your Butts, by the way, was named the number 3 comedy of 2014 by Time Out New York magazine. Kristen is a co-founder, along with college pals Nick Abiel and Kyle Schaefer, of Recent Cutbacks, a theater group that in fact has many cast members who are University of Evansville alums. Even though Recent Cutbacks, and you gotta love the name, is based in New York City, its shows have been performed in Indianapolis and Chicago. So let's meet and get to know Kristen McCarthy Parker. Welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Kristen, when were you bitten by the theater bug? Was it acting only, or did you want to do something else?
It started out with acting, yes. I think like many people, where many people get their start in the theater. I first got involved in theater when I was in high school because my family had just relocated from New Hampshire to North Carolina. And I had been doing a lot of winter sports up there, like cross-country ski racing. And obviously, you can't do that when you move down south. So I got back into dance. I had taken some dance classes when I was younger, and I sort of re-explored that when I was down in North Carolina. And that led to chorus and to singing and then into theater. So I started doing work at a local community theater called Raleigh Little Theater. And I started acting in school plays, some of them dramas, some of them comedies, some of them musicals, did a little bit of everything. And I also was like taking some classes at Raleigh Little Theater that were like in Shakespearean clown and mask work and physical theater. So that's kind of where I started to really get into that theatrical medium. And then I decided that I really wanted to continue studying it when I went to college. And that took me to the University of Evansville,
which has a very strong theatrical program?
Yeah, it does. It is a more of a liberal arts-based curriculum. So I was there for theater performance, at least initially, but I had to take classes in design, in costume, in set design, in lighting design. And in my junior year, I had to take a directing class, which I was terrified of. I was like, I'll just do it in the fall semester. I'll get it over with.
Right.
And then
leave me alone.
And then I'll never go back. And we had to showcase some projects, some classroom projects in that class. And our department chair, John David Lutz, who is also the directing professor, was like, you have a real eye for this. Like, you should continue to do this. We started out doing like small scenes. So I did something by like Marsha Norman.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did like, I forget what the other two were, but it was just like 10-minute scenes at least initially. So very, very short. But I kind of started to get a taste for it. And then my senior year, I applied to direct our studio show. We have 2 studio shows, one in the fall and one in the spring, and I did House of Blue Leaves by John Guare. So that was a big challenge, but also like wonderful. And I was like, wow, I really do love directing. And at the time, I think I was still kind of unsure because I was still an actor and directing and doing some dramaturgy as well, and like lit interning at the New Harmony Project, where we would go sometimes in the summer. And I sort of just felt like, oh my gosh, I have there's an embarrassment of
riches in a sense, right? You could close your eyes and go down the list.
Sure.
But they all interested you.
Yeah. And I've kind of come to realize that that's actually like a wonderful strength, right? To be a multi sort of faceted theater artist, especially in New York City. especially because it's so helpful in the creation of your own work. But I think at the time when you're graduating school, everybody like wants to know what's the thing that you do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, a little bit of everything. But I really found myself compelled to continue pursuing directing. I think in part because my brain works a little bit better that way. I've always sort of, when I've been on the inside of a process as an actor, felt a little bit like I can't quite turn off that switch that is wondering what it looks like or how it's being received by the audience. And it was really hard for me to live in the moment. And so being able to be on the outside of that process and understand sort of the scope of the show and how the audience is relating to it, and working with the playwright especially, were things that I feel like I just have always been a little bit stronger at. So it spoke to my interest.
But when you were pursuing an acting career, mm-hmm. did you think if you met your fairy godmother that you'd come to New York and you'd be on Broadway? Or were you going to go to L.A. and be in films?
I didn't really think either, because when I graduated, I was, as I said, like interested in directing and acting. And I decided to pursue an internship at Portland Stage Company in Maine, which was a directing and dramaturgy internship. Part of that was because I was at the time feeling a little trepidatious about coming to New York directly out of school. I was like, I don't know that I'm ready for that. I was a suburban kid, a college town
kid. What year
kid.
Did you graduate?
2010.
And you came to New York 2 years later?
I came to New York, a year and a half later.
That's nothing.
I know. But at the time, I was
so
like, I need
young,
a break here.
You're young, aren't you?
I'm young, youngish. I spent a year, you know, working at a regional theater. Learning
did you
a lot
act?
Of really valuable skills. We did a couple of small projects on the side, but nothing serious. Mm-hmm. I was mostly working in their literary and education office. We were providing a lot of like dramaturgical resource guides for both audiences and student groups who would mm-hmm. come. And then I was also assistant directing shows throughout the season. So it was a very small, it's Alert D regional theater. So there was a small staff, and we got to sort of dip our hands into a lot of different pots, which was fantastic.
So I want to know mm-hmm. what your thinking process was. Here mm-hmm. you are in Maine, and you're mm-hmm. young, and I'm not patronizing you in mm-hmm. that sense. But and then you said, okay, I'm ready for New York.
At the time, I knew that eventually I was going to end up in either New York City or Chicago. I think, intimidated by both simply by virtue of the fact that I had never lived in a city before. And it ultimately came down to me having a much stronger network of people in New York City.
That you managed to cultivate?
Yeah. And a lot of that, you know, is people that I went to school with.
Who came here,
exactly. My mother's family is also from New York City. My grandparents were born and bred New Yorkers, so I was somewhat more familiar with it in that sense.
That you'd been here before.
That I'd been here before, and I had been to Chicago as well. So it was after the internship at Portland, I spent a summer at the theater at Monmouth in Maine doing like summer rep. And then I assisted a show down at in my hometown of Chapel Hill at Playmakers Rep. And then it was kind of like, well, all right, I'm going to save up some money. And I came here that winter.
So your focus, you knew mm-hmm. that at that point it mm-hmm. was going to be directing and not acting.
At that point, I think I was still a little bit on the fence. I was like, these are the two things that I like to do.
The most.
Mm-hmm. I think what I didn't realize fully until I got here to New York City was how much more agency one has as a director.
What does that mean?
In some sense, especially for me as a young woman, and especially, I mean, those of you who are listening can't tell this. I'm 6'1", so mm-hmm. so I was finding myself not getting seen for a lot of things in terms of auditions. And I actually was cast a lot as men in Shakespeare plays. I was cross-gender cast in Shakespeare plays,
okay.
Which is great. I love, you know, I love Shakespeare, but I was kind of like, okay, like this is a niche that like I would like to push beyond that.
I hear you.
So, you know, being able to direct for me gave me a stronger sense of ownership of the project and the ability to control a little bit more what I was working on, who I was working with, the environment that I was working in, instead of being at the mercy of people finding me to act in things.
But how did that match come about? You come to New York. Mm-hmm. Did you have connections here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we
you did.
There's, yeah,
that
absolutely.
You, that you were not nonplussed about how am I going to earn a living? What is it that I'm going to do?
I mean, I think nonplussed in the same way that everybody is when they get here. I had a strong alumni network from Evansville, as I mentioned. So being able to call on friends and people that I had worked with when I was at school were the initial opportunities that I received upon arriving here.
So what was your first paying gig?
Actual paying gig or
actual.
Like stipend gig?
Well, that put money in your pocket. And said, I'm staying because this isn't out of the realm of possibilities.
Right.
It's one thing to believe in yourself and have a strong sense of self. But
sure.
There's all these, you know, contributing factors, not the least of which is this is a tough road to hoe.
No, absolutely.
The Big Apple.
Absolutely. I'm sure that I received some money for my first full-length show that I directed here with my friend's company, which is now defunct, but was then called Sans A. And that production was Bears by Mark Rigney. And that went up at 59 East 59.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first show that I did in New York. But, you know, it's been
it wasn't
been a balance
so hard
of,
for you, correct? I mean, you didn't have to, you know, that it didn't take eons to kind of get entrenched here.
I think that
I'm not glossing over this, but
no, not at all. I mean, I think that, you know, in terms of like financial stability, I've had to hold down a day job for 4 of the 5 years that I've been here, for sure. And that's, you know, something that I'm it was my goal that like within 5 years I would be able to leave some of the day job behind.
Gotcha.
To be able to
mm-hmm.
focus more mm-hmm. Thoroughly on theater. And I am getting there. So I'm kind of right on schedule in that regard. I mean, I think I was lucky to have a group of people who I knew who were making work and very active. And I've certainly been able to use those connections to make work that has led to other opportunities. I mean, recent cutbacks is one of the things that has really sort of given those of us in the group a name here in the city. And that was something that, you know, we created amongst friends. But it's been, you know, it's been, you meet somebody here and then that leads to the next thing
and
leads
so
to the next
on,
thing.
And so
then it just
on.
Continues
yes.
to spider web out as
right.
it always does.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, it's been a lot of hard work and I hope, you know, successful work in the interim it's a lovely road.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Kristen McCarthy Parker, who is a freelance director. You know, this also begs the question that there are not many female directors, whether it's the stage mm-hmm. or film. And that had to have some kind of an impact on you, didn't it? I mean, and it's still, we're still talking about this, whatever. You know, it's not that you started this a million years ago. It's not that long ago. And while we've made strides, we haven't made strides or enough strides.
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Did that unnerve you, worry you?
I think I didn't realize the depth of institutionalized sexism until I arrived in New York City.
No kidding.
Yeah. I think in academia, or at least in college, I was a good student. So in high school mm-hmm. and college, I was...
So gender didn't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it was a very, like, clear merit-based system of you do the work, you get good grades, and then, you
But
know,
when you were in school, were there many of you doing the directing?
There were a couple of other female directors, yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think my class in particular was heavier with people who were interested in women who are interested in directing mm-hmm. than men who were. But certainly when I came here, I mean, I think we female directors have, there as you mentioned, it has gotten better. We have made strides in terms of opportunity and visibility, but I think obviously there is still a gap. So it's been something that I have tried not to get intimidated by, but have sort of
just
worked
forged
very
ahead.
Hard
mm-hmm.
to just forge ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think I see it most when you know, because most people don't fully comprehend everything that happens behind the scenes, but there are a lot of times when I'll get out of a show and I'll be in the lobby next to the actors and somebody will be like, oh, like, were you involved in this? Were you like the costume designer or something? And I'm like, no, I was the director actually. And they were like, oh, so when did you like hop on board the production? Which I'm always like, well, I guess day one when we came up with the idea to do it, you know, it's like, how do you respond to something like that?
Because
I understand it's an innocent question, but.
But it's just so, I mean, it makes my shoulders sag that it's some, mm-hmm. you know, that not, you're doing this work, but you're also having to educate. Not that that's a terrible thing, but at some point, does it really matter? It's who did the directing, not the gender of who did the directing.
Exactly. I think on some level it's there. That sort of representation is important, especially for plays that are written by and about women. It can often be very helpful to have a female director, in the same way that that kind of representation and diversity is important, no matter what the subject matter is. But, you know, there have been times for sure, as I'm sure this has happened to any female director, where, you know, you have somebody be like, I really want to, you know, consider you for this project because it's really important to us that we have a female director. And on the one hand, you're like, well, that's great that we're fighting for that representation. But also, is that the same focus of yours when it's a play that's written by a man? Mm-hmm. You know, or is it only particular to plays written by women? And I think that might be one of the reasons why I encounter surprise when people learn that I directed these comedies, these parodies, because I think we tend to associate that kind of work with men. I think men have a stronger voice in comedy, and certainly, again, it's another area where we're starting to see more female voices, both in, you know, stand-up and television and movies and, you know, Ghostbusters. The new Ghostbusters was kind of wonderful, but they also came under a lot of
fire.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fire for that.
People just think women, if they're funny, they're corny funny, or they're just, I don't, it doesn't even matter.
It doesn't matter.
But how did you get involved? What was the attraction for you with the film parodies and making them into theatrical productions?
I mentioned earlier very briefly that I had done some physical theater, some physical comedy, clown, back when I first started getting involved in theater. So that's always been an interest of mine. And when I got to New York, I was doing a lot of assisting. I was working on a lot of projects. But that was something that I was continuing to cultivate most closely with my friend and collaborator, Nick Abiel. And we were doing these kind of short one-off projects that were, you know, as part of like, you know, evenings of short plays or whatever. And we would be exploring like, okay, well, what if we take this and we do something that's like very physical and just exploring a lot of different, you know, mediums in that sense. And after being in New York for about 2 or 3 years, I hit that point that I think most people hit after you've been in New York a couple of years, where you're like, man, I'm really not like gaining any traction. And I'm doing the right kind of things, but I'm more just there as an observer, or I'm not quite
entrenched.
At the level where mm-hmm. Where that's happening, and I'm seeing a lot of stuff that I think is important, but that isn't like lighting a fire under me. And Nick at the time was feeling the same way, and like one night over beers, we just kind of hatched this idea to do something that would be fun for ourselves, and that took the form of Hold On To Your Butts, which was, well, what if we do a two-man parody remake of Jurassic Park. And so, you know, we actually applied to Ars Nova Ant Fest with it and, of course, got rejected. So we were like, well, you know what? Like, screw that. We'll do it on our own. We'll just put it up for one night in the summer and we'll invite our friends and, you know, see what happens.
But you had to write that.
We pretty much devised it. Yeah. So, you know,
was it kind of improv-y, in a sense?
Definitely aspects of that show are improvs on in every performance. But we, you know, we brought aboard Kyle Schaefer, who's now, you know, an integral part of the group, and our other friend from Evansville, Kelsey Didion, to be a Foley artist. We really wanted to do the sound and Foley of the show live. And we got into a room and we were like, here are a bunch of ideas of things that we've been thinking about. Like maybe there's a cardboard door frame. Maybe there's an umbrella that works as a helicopter and as something else. Like, let's explore and see what we can find.
So you kind of talked it out,
and
in
so
a sense.
We did. We brainstormed for months.
Brainstorm,
and then we got
mm-hmm.
into the room and we were like, great, we're going to give ourselves a month to build this thing, you know. And then we rented out Under St. Mark's, which is, you know, that little theater on St. Mark's.
East Village,
yeah, it's
in
about
New York
45
City.
Seat mm-hmm. theater, you know, in a basement. But we had done a lot of other stuff there, and at the time it very much felt like home. And so we sold out. I mean, you know, we like to say,
we
sold out our show.
Yeah. You're not lying.
We used it later in marketing. It was really helpful. But yeah, and did it. And, you know, the guys will say that it was before they went on stage that night, it was one of the most terrified that they've ever felt, because here we were doing this project that we didn't know what it was, really. We didn't know if it would work. We just knew that we were having fun doing it.
And it flew, huh?
We put it up and the audience loved it. And that was like it was definitely like not much rougher than its current iteration. But a friend of ours who had seen it introduced us to the then artistic director at the Pit, Kevin Labeson, and we were invited to do the show there. So we did 5 performances at the Pit, and then that snowballed into another run later in the year. And then we were just sort of started performing the show consistently. And after we had done that for about a year and a half, we decided to take on another project. So it started from a place of we're feeling restless creatively. How can we do something that is exciting to us? And then by extension, we started to formulate like our own aesthetic and incorporate things that we were interested in exploring artistically. So, you know, for me, Recent Cutbacks is like this really great medium between whatever is driving us or driving us creatively, whatever we're curious about, and then, you know, material that people have a connection
well,
to.
Well, what came first? Hold on to your butts or Recent Cutbacks?
Hold on to your butts.
And then as a result of that, your theater group, Recent Cutbacks, was born. I want to read a New York Theater Review of Hold On to Your Butts. It says, director Kristen McCarthy Parker has choreographed an hour of pure farce with seamless transitions from scene to scene. A great mix of comedy and pop culture, parody and homage. The team at Recent Cutbacks has crafted a highly entertaining theatrical experience. Did that push you over the moon?
Yeah.
What a great validation.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely.
So Recent Cutbacks is born. And then what happens? What was your goal?
Our goal is to continue to push ourselves as artists and creators and to create work that is, like, audience engagement is a very important aspect of the show for us.
Of the shows.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We are determinedly lo-fi, especially Hold On To Your Butts and Fly You Fools. We don't have a lot of stuff on stage. We are, you know, we have a limited number.
Bare bones, kind
of? Of props, exactly, that we are using to tell the story. And the other, you know, significant part of that conversation is the audience's imagination and what they remember of the movie. And then how they kind of complete the storytelling in their mind. And we hope to do that in a way that is exciting and fun and thrilling. That's a great word. I'm happy to use that to talk about our shows. But it's also, you know, giving people, I think, that sort of shared emotional experience that is like, I see something coming to life on stage in a way that I didn't imagine possible before. And it's delightful, and it's
so there's no rigidity. There's this flexibility. Mm-hmm. So in other words, that kind of begs the question: is the show the same every time it's performed?
No,
I would think not. Yeah,
it has similarities, and after we do it, you know, enough times, we sort of find a rhythm, and we get better at reading the audience and what they're going to be giving us. But absolutely, there are. Especially as we continue to, you know, Hold On To Your Butts, we've done maybe like 60 times now. I mean,
wow.
There are things that there are jokes that were really strong when we first started performing it that got less strong. So we took them out of the show and then like tried putting them back in and they worked again. There's like an ebb and flow to the comedy at this point.
What's interesting is the show is only an hour, correct?
Yes, all of the shows are only an
hour. Only an hour. So, but they're not coupled with anything else. When you come to see the show, you're only seeing the one.
Yes.
Because that's also an interesting dynamic.
We do have double features, though, where we do 2 shows back to back. So we have 2 nights. Yeah, well, we do that every now and again, which is really, really fun because you get to see, you know, the guys. It's a very physical It's a lot of work. It's a lot of exercise for the
They're
the
exhausted
guys
when the curtain comes down, so
exactly.
to speak.
Exactly, and you kind of get to go on that journey.
Is Recent Cutbacks a theater troupe? Is it the same, you know, performers who are associated with the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think as of this point, kind of the consistent 3 are myself and Nick and Kyle. And then we have people who we will bring on for projects
that you'll audition.
Yeah, who are like invited, very much like invited to join the company, quote unquote, and, mm-hmm. and be part of the family.
Join the company as in being on stage, because the three of you are mm-hmm. behind the stage, correct?
Nick and Kyle have performed in all the shows,
but not you.
No, not me. Mm-hmm. I'm the outside eye, and all of this is sort of determined by what we need for each production. You know, in Kevin, which we are currently working on, we really
and
wanted to
and that's the one about Home Alone,
that
a parody
about
of
Home Alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're using so many puppets and miniatures and live projections, we realized we needed four people on stage. And then we also wanted to incorporate live music. That was very important to us. So we have a four-person SATB choir that will be singing a cappella with a lot of
Christmas
music.
So this is a departure.
This is a big step forward for us. You know, we had two people on stage, three people on stage for Butts, four people on stage for Fly You Fools, and now we're going to have eight. So we're doubling our numbers.
So you keep testing yourself.
Absolutely.
So what's your dream job?
I like to think that I'm kind of already doing it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I've always just really wanted to be a freelance director. Certainly, I hope that the scope and the level of the things that I am working on continues to expand, and you know, I continue to work my way up the ladder a little bit.
Would you like to direct a musical?
Yes, I was just going to say I would love to direct a musical. That very much feels like the next step.
An original musical.
Ideally, yes. Mm-hmm. There are some things in the works.
That takes forever
to develop a musical, but yes.
Is recent cutbacks profitable?
We are profitable, yeah. Technically, we're commercial. We are a business, and we have been fortunate enough to not have to do fundraising in the way that, you know, for a long time at least. I think we fundraised like $350 for our first show or something like that. We were like, just for the space. We just need some help running the space. Our income from that mostly comes from ticket sales, and it's, yeah.
So when you look at where you are today, mm-hmm. is this where you wanted to be, where you want to be? Did you imagine that this is what, or this is not
when
a surprise
I first, when I
for
first
you?
Started out?
Yeah.
Total mm-hmm. surprise. Complete and total surprise. Yeah.
But a good surprise.
A very good surprise. Yes. You know, when I was in school, we were doing a lot of, like, 20th century plays. It was very, like, naturalism-focused, which was wonderful. But, you know, I didn't really do a ton of physical comedy in that sense while I was studying in school, or at least in college. And it's just kind of once I got to New York and I started to pursue that path, I was like, oh, this is my niche. This is what I love. This is like where my heart is. And it's kind of one thing has led to another. And
that's what's so great about your life, that you're not selling out. This is what's kind of in your soul, even though you didn't know it, or this is in your heart, and that you were able to carry this out to see, oh, forgive this, you know, the dream come alive, you know?
Yeah.
But it's so wonderful that your creative juices are just flowing. It's not, mm-hmm. again, that you're directing some heavy-duty drama. You've come up with your own stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so great, that, you know, the creativity just is everywhere, is pervasive.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I agree with that.
I think that's wonderful. Well, we've run out of time, but the simple thing for me to say is I wish you more continued success.
Thank you so much.
It's so wonderful that you have been able to live the dream.
Yes.
So all's right in Krista McCarthy Parker's world right now,
well,
right?
Well, it's
you're in a good place.
I'm trying not to
jinx
it. No, I'm just focusing on what's next. And
well, please let us know what's next.
Of course.
You know, by all means.
Will do.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Kristen.
Thank you, Sandy.
I really liked our conversation. I learned a lot.
Grand.
And yeah. Well, join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women, and please go to our iTunes store page and leave a rating and a review. And if you know anyone you think that we should interview, contact us at sandyklineshow.com.